Hello and welcome to this, our first episode of a new podcast to Traveling Mages. We specialize in bringing information and lifestyle news to those that live abroad and are part of the magic community, but don't necessarily speak the local language. Joining me today, we have William Beversleys and Lucas Morales. I myself am Jose Lee. Say hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Really? That's all you guys got?
How's it going? My name is Lucas Morales. This is my voice.
All right, moving on. Yeah, so just if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, most of us have actually lived abroad for a good number of years. I myself have lived in Japan for the last 3.5 years, and I started playing Magic about 10 years ago. Like most people, took a huge long break and then got back around the Scarce Mirroring block. Now, during this time, halfway through Innistrad, I moved to Japan and decided to continue playing Magic. This has caused a series of challenges for me as playing Magic in a completely different language. It's a very different type of game. You know, how do you guys feel?
I mean, it's come a long way. I mean, like you said before, when I first started playing when I was in middle school, back when Onslaught Block was legal, like, I didn't go to FNMs, you know. We all had our, you know, tribal decks. You know, I had a goblin deck, an elf deck, and stuff like that. And I mean, now it's almost become more like a job now.
Yeah, it's kind of true. It's very easy to find very casual playing when you're back in the States, but it's kind of weird abroad, because if you want to go to a store, then you're at the very least looking at FNN type playing, and because you don't speak the language casually, it's actually very hard to talk to, for example, here in Japan, local Japanese players. So it's kind of hard to just make friends and pick up a new EDH group. So in some ways, you're actually kind of funneled into the competitive sphere unless you find a casual group of foreigners that speak your language. Now, hey, Lucas, weren't you guys playing down where you're at? You had Josh, and you had a couple other guys that you were playing kind of pseudo-casual games, a lot of EDH and that sort of thing.
Actually, yeah. Where I'm at, you know, I'm in Japan currently. I've been out here for a couple years. And first got out here, you know, I like to play Magic. I was interested in getting into the Magic scene out here, and I didn't really know anybody. One good thing that I've realized moving around is that Facebook will help you find Magic players. There are so many Facebook pages and groups of, you know, Magic the Gathering community in insert wherever you're at, you know, whether it be Japan. For you, you're going to go to, what was it, South Korea?
Yeah, I'm going to South Korea in a couple of months, actually. So this podcast will be recorded in South Korea, but with input from members from Japan and Europe. So, yeah, what you're saying.
And just in a couple months, I'll be back in the States. I've already went out and I've looked at Facebook groups and stuff like that. And there are Magic the Gathering community Facebook groups of where I'm going. So I find that that helps you get into the game. But get into the game in whatever location you're at. No, I do agree with the, you know, getting into the community. I don't think I would just dive straight in, or quote unquote delve right into the competitive scene. You got to know the player base first. So I did start off with a lot of EDH out here, and then, you know, I met all you guys.
And that's actually a really good point. Me and two other guys, Dan Galagak and Chris Kuya. Chris actually started the local Magic website a couple of years back. And me and Dan, are all three of us, we moderated together. And between the three of us, we've actually managed to bring out a lot of the Magic community. Now, we're particularly lucky because where we are in Japan, there's a large American presence because the military presence over here. So there's actually a lot of English-speaking Magic players. But we draw on people that have gone to the local universities, that actually just go out and work out in town. And they're members of the group too, and they found our community by coming to Facebook. So that's a really good point. If you don't have a Facebook community wherever you're at abroad, or if you're just even visiting somewhere and you check out your local Facebook group, you might actually find someone that's over there. I'm actually thinking, as I travel, I've actually considered making it my goal that if I hit a new country, to make sure that I hit the FNM scene at least once there, just to check it out and just to play, just for the challenge of saying I played FNM all over the world. But so I think
it also gives you cheap.
What is that?
It also gives you achievement for a Planeswalker points.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I'm actually trying to get that. I think I'm, what is it?
Called, like, traveling the realms or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So I got my America one. I got my Asia one. So I just, so what are the other ones? Like, Europe? Is there an Africa one, man? Or?
I think there is an Africa one.
Oh, that's going
to
be
hard. I mean, if you want to fly out to Africa and play in, you know, all the Grand Prix out there, that's a big deal.
Is there a Grand Prix in Africa?
No, there is not.
Okay, but you know, I think there's like Grand Prix Mexico City, so that one's pretty cool. Yeah.
There is.
Yeah, so the what about you, Will?
I mean, like, what I want to, like, saying, like, the one thing about I've liked about traveling abroad, and it's just in Magic in general, is Magic gives you the opportunity to meet, like, really cool players, you know, all the Japanese yep. players or, you know, all the American players I met out here. I mean, it's really changed my life. I mean, the Facebook group we have is great. I mean, anytime I need a card, I go in there first. Every time I'm trying to get rid of a card, I go in there first, try to give people a better deal than just selling it on eBay. I mean, It's really opened my eyes to the game itself and just how popular it is and how much it's growing. I love introducing new players to Magic and helping them develop better.
And that's actually the whole point of starting this podcast, because as I'm getting ready to leave Japan, I realized, man, you know, I really know a lot of people that are spread all over the world. So in so many ways, no matter where I am, I could probably connect to someone that is nearby just because of the Magic community. So I think it's an aspect that, from the podcast angle, it's not necessarily hit a lot. You don't get to hear about all these great communities of both foreign and American Magic players that are just out there and you can just tap into, because we seem to be a pretty supportive community is what I've noticed so far.
That's Magic in general. Magic really brings, in my opinion, the best out in people. And, you know, when I started playing Magic and when I started getting into it, you know, you don't really know anybody. You just kind of jump into the competitive scene or try and get into the competitive scene, and then you start meeting these people, and then if you're a competitive player, you know how it is. You start falling into cliques,
yep.
I guess you can say.
Yep.
And, you know, just because you're in a clique doesn't mean you don't like people outside your clique. But you start hanging out with a group of people, whether they're your actual friends or they're your quote-unquote Magic friends that you only see when you go and play Magic events, and, you know, they still know a lot about you. But Magic just, it changes the way people look at life, and it changes the way we make friends and communicate with people. Like, for example, I would have never met any of you or majority of what I would consider my best friends on this island without the game of Magic.
Yeah, and that's true. Just a couple of months ago, me and Will, we went down to Nagoya, and we just hung out, had a good time. You know, we got to hit the nightlife scene afterwards and playing the tournament. And, you know, who would have thought that, you know, I was actually going to be taking those type of trips and making new friends and meeting new folks. For example, we got to meet a lot of the guys that are in our Facebook group that happened to be in mainland Japan. Like, we met Koji. Who else did we meet out there?
It was mainly just Koji. The friends, his friends after that we met were, oh, man, there was that wolf guy. it was mainly Koji. Koji is awesome. Hopefully one day we can actually have him on here.
Yeah, that is true. We definitely would like to have Koji come onto the show. Yeah, so, you know, if you somehow you manage to hear this once we post about the podcast in the Facebook group, you know, you totally got an invite to the show. So just comment down. But so traveling around, you know, I actually noticed something recently, and it was that I finally, as a Magic player, have reached that point, which I understand it's not that big of a deal, but I reached that point where I qualified to play in a WMCQ. And not just any of the WMCQs, but I actually qualified to play in Japan's WMCQ. Now, how freaking crazy is that to say, you know, I'm an American, and because I've been living in Japan for X amount of time, I can actually play in their WMCQ. And unfortunately, it's actually going – the first one is going on as we speak, and then I'll be traveling back to the States in a couple of weeks for vacation while the second one goes on. But I just thought about it. How insane would it be if I was in the Japanese team?
Pretty crazy. I mean, it's that's why I love Magic, is no matter where you are in the world, you have access to play. I mean, even in places that don't have FNMs and GPs and stuff, you can qualify – just by having an internet connection and playing online.
That is really true. I was actually considering once I get to South Korea, then I might actually just switch over and do a lot of Magic Online stuff. But you know what? Even then, South Korea. So Japan takes 500 points to qualify to play in the tournament, right? Korea is 200. So I'm thinking, all right, cool. If I can't make the Japanese team, well, I think I'm going to make it my goal. And maybe we can track this throughout the podcast next year. So next time this year, we could have a special episode called my tryout for the South Korean World Cup team. But I just think it would be so awesome if I actually were to make the South Korean team. You see the coverage. Everybody's going, who is that guy? Is the guy from South Korea? And then they'd be like,
is he South Korean?
What is that?
I said, is he South Korean?
Yeah, I know, right? Just be the one foreigner in the team. I don't even speak Korean, but it'd be pretty awesome to actually make the team.
Yeah, that would sound like a blast. Being on a team like that, I think that if you go to an event and, you know, like you go with a group of guys. So, for example, like a modern GP where, you know, there is no teams and stuff like that. You go and you do well. You feel really good about yourself. But if you go to a team event, you know, like a team sealed or something like that, and you go and your team does really well, you feel so much better and you're so much happier just because not you succeeded, but you and your friends went and you guys, you know, you owned it. You went out there and had a blast, crushed some people playing Magic. And it's better to succeed with a group of people instead of just by yourself. So, yeah, that would sound like a blast.
In a foreign language.
Exactly. Just random people that you don't know, that you probably wouldn't meet ever if it wasn't for Magic, just melding together as a melting pot, you know?
The funniest thing is I actually met an Italian speaker in Nagoya. It's just this Italian guy, and I sat down. We played the match, totally crushed him, by the way. And the as we played this match, I just said, "So you're an Italian. What are you doing in Japan?" And you know what? The first thing he said to me is like, "Well, you're an American. What are you doing in Japan?" And I was like, "All right, touche." But especially. Yeah.
I said, got him, coach.
Yeah, especially since at the time I was definitely writing the X and 2 bracket. So it's not like I got there because I was a total pro. So I go ahead and sit down and play him. Turns out that he was actually he had immigrated to Japan, and he was an Italian teacher. And that's what he did. He had an Italian academy. He had a Japanese wife, and he made a living teaching Italian to people down in Nagoya. Which I'm thinking, you know what? I speak a couple of languages myself. Maybe that's a possible career option in the future. So I totally took his card, and then been trying to keep in touch with this guy because I'm thinking, you know what? This might be a second career for me.
Yeah, GP Nagoya was definitely an experience, and I mean, I wasn't a limited player by any means. I mean, I just wanted to go to a GP and have that experience, and I had a blast. I mean, I did terrible. But I did get the Build 2 Legacy decks out of it, so, I mean, it wasn't a total loss. But, the people we met out there were just awesome. I mean, out of blast. Nagoya was a great place. Some great food.
Great bars.
Yeah, the bar scene was all right.
Food it's home for me. Well, and alcohol bars, obviously.
Yeah, speaking of that, I actually, yeah, you're right. You built 2 Legacy decks. At the time, I wasn't even considering Legacy, and I managed to build my first Legacy deck. But what I got to say is I was shocked with the amount of Legacy cards available in Japan during that GP. I mean, wasn't that kind of crazy, Will?
Yeah, it was amazing just because, like, you found out that the GPs are mainly just to, like, the GP itself and then people just getting their Legacy staples and some modern staples. But, I mean, yeah, the amount of finding standard cards there was probably, like, the hardest thing you could do because nobody wanted them or had them. It was just a bunch of guys slinging Legacy cards.
Yeah, so just definitely the big ballers were out during that particular event. But, yeah, that was pretty cool. And that's something that, you know, if you're the F&M type of guy and you're listening to podcasts and you're thinking, you know, I really would like to get out there and just try out a GP, why don't you consider next time you take a vacation abroad, link up a GP next to it and take some friends. It'll definitely be a lot of fun out there.
A lot of players do that, actually. A lot of the pro players, they go on vacation and they take their girlfriend or wife or whatever And it just so happens to be a GP in that area in another country, and they just hit it up that weekend.
That's totally what I'm doing. I'm trying to get the girlfriend just kind of to understand, hey, this is a lifestyle. We will travel a lot, but I might be gone for 2 days out of those seven.
The majority of the weekends, because I'm trying to play some Magic.
Yeah, totally. So Lucas, now you're talking about Modern. You're going to be playing in GP Kobe. Is that correct?
GP Kobe is next week, and I'm super excited for it. We've been trying to do as much prep as possible, me and my group of guys, and we're bringing some good decks. We're bringing a rogue deck or two, you know, something underneath the table and all that stuff. But it's looking pretty promising. We've been putting in a lot of hard work. We've been grinding online, grinding on paper, and I just hope the best for me and my group of guys that I'm going with.
Who are you going with?
Okay, so if you know me, which hopefully all of you listeners will soon get to know me, my mind is like a roller coaster. I'm everywhere. I don't want to be, I'm here, and then I'm there, and then I'm everywhere, you know? So I first picked up Pawn, and...
That's funny. Your mind is a roller coaster because I ask you who, but nah, that's cool. Talk about the decks, man.
No, I picked up Pod, and I was running Pod, and I really liked it. Pod is super sweet because it's an aggro deck. Well, a lot of people don't know this. Well, if you are not that big into Modern, most people look at Pod as a combo deck. Now, you can go a couple routes. You can go to Kiki Pod.
Which I play.
You can go to, which you play. You can go to Kiki Pod, Malira Pod. Or I guess you can go Angel Pod. So there's a difference between all the decks. Kiki Pod is combo first, aggro second.
Well, you know, I don't know. I would kind of disagree on that, but carry on. Yeah. Now, which one did you settle on? You settled on Malira, right?
I settled on a mixture between Malira and Angel Pod.
Oh, yeah?
I think that the Malira combo is good. It's not bad, so I don't think you should cut it. But I think the Angel combo is better because you don't have to interact with the graveyard.
Right. Right.
For Malira, if you go to combo out, if they have any graveyard hate, like a Relic or a Scavenging Ooze or a Rest in Peace, you know, like that kind of sets you back. And those are huge cards in the format that are most likely going to be in majority of your opponent's decks. And the Archangel of Thune... And what's that other guy's name?
Spike Feeder?
Yeah, they don't interact with the graveyard. They just do their thing on the board, which if you're trying to combo out with Malira, it really deteriorates on the fact that you're trying to combo.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people don't consider this, but the graveyard being open is actually part of the Malira combo, which is kind of what I like about the Kiki Pod combo is that while we do the Kiki Pod, that deck does take advantage of some recursion with your Kitchen Finks and those cards like that. When those cards are coming back, they're actually coming back to give you advantage. They're not necessarily part of the combo, which you can do the complete combo and don't have to interact with the graveyard for 1 second. In fact, when it comes to Kiki Pod, unless you're playing Eternal Witness, there's really not that much use for the graveyard, except to recur, say, like a Court of Calling or something like that.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, they're both great decks, and they're both, you know, Pod is at first it's a toolbox. They're both toolbox decks, and you choose your bullets, and some of those bullets are interchangeable, like how many Kitchen Finks you want to run, how many Voices. If you want to play Kiki or Malira, they both have their advantages. The one reason I like Malira is because you have access to Sin Collector and Orzhov Pontiff. Yeah. And those two cards right now are very good in the format, especially with Affinity.
Yeah, definitely Malira Pod seems to be more heavily they tend to have more removal. They tend to you could potentially play a Thoughtseize, you could play any sort of black green type removal that is out there. So that is definitely an edge that I saw that Malira does have. My only concern with Malira though is that usually tend to need more cards to combo off than you do with say like a Kiki or an Angel.
And that's where Lucas was saying is Kiki Pod you're more focused on the combo. Malirapod has a perfectly good beat your face in game plan without it, you know?
Yeah, I guess what the way I'm comparing is when the two face off, I tend to think that Malirapod ends up playing more like an aggro deck, whereas Kikipod ends up playing more like a mid-range deck, because Kikipod's creatures will tend to, in the long run, outperform Malirapod's creatures. But Malirapod does – it's a whole lot cheaper to use Court of Calling. So Court of Calling is way more efficient in Malirapod than it is in Kikipod.
And that's true. And Court is actually the worst card in both those decks. I mean, that's the card I go to cut first.
And that is true. And I've been considering trying out Domri. I do see some decks that run Domri instead. But as expensive as it is, I still like the notion of being able to, instead of using Domri's ability to hopefully get what you need, just go ahead and pay him for what you need. So that is very true. I do wonder if there will be a card printed out within the next year or two that will actually be a good final replacement for Core. So you're going with a group of guys, right? So I know Dan is probably going. Dan's still up for going, isn't he?
There's a lot of stuff going on the fence, but he may or may not go. We don't know about that, but we do have a good group of guys going. I'm going. That's already laid out on the table. Josh Gibson is going. One of our buddies, Brooks, he's going. Frank should be going. Joe, the French guy.
Yeah, Joe, the French guy. Yep.
He's something else.
Just as a little preview, Joe, the French guy, will probably be joining us within the next couple of weeks, either. And in our next show, which will actually be called the Road to GP Kobe, and or afterwards, which will be the Road Coming Back from GP Kobe, or whatever we decide to call it at the time. So yeah, Joe, Dan, Chris, expect these names to pop up soon, because they will all be part of the rotating cast host for this podcast.
The podcast, getting all of us together, is super hard to do because, maybe right now majority of us might be in the same place, so we're all working on the same time schedule, but in a couple months we're all about to scatter.
Right. That is very true.
We're all going to be all over the world doing our own thing, and it's going to be really cool being able to keep in contact with, all my good friends and hear what's going on in other countries and what the meta's like there.
Right.
And most of you might not know this, but before GP, whatever the last GP Boston Worcester, before GP Boston, Black Green X, whatever you want to call it, the Rock, Junk, Jund, any of those type of mid-range decks, out in Japan, that is actually huge in the meta.
That
people
is true.
Actually run, who's that vampire? The guy that transforms and makes 2/2 lifelinkers.
Oh, yes. You're talking about, I know what you're
Bloodline
talking
Keeper. The card is Bloodline Keeper.
Yeah, Bloodline Keeper, right. Limited Superstar.
Yeah, Limited Superstar. But actually, Modern Superstar as well. Out here in Japan, people run 1 to 3 of those in their sideboard just to beat the mirror match, because it really stops in the mirror. And it's just huge. And it's a different feeling about the meta between, in the United States and Japan and Europe, and it's just a different scene, which is why when all of these huge events go down, technically anything happens.
Yeah, and that's kind of funny. Yeah, just the other night, I was playing, I played 2 FNMs in a row, and just so you understand how the meta is kind of skewed out here, because they, in Japan, they follow a different list of pros. They don't follow the pros we follow back in the States. Their websites that they follow, they have their own different things. Yuki, the guy that was in the top 8, total unknown in the States, but he's a god over here in Japan with his streaming, and it's very surprising. And what they do is they definitely do follow a different set of ideas. And what's kind of interesting is one week I ran just the old regular stock blue white control list that had detention spheres, and it had all those sorts of enchantment type exile removal spells, and I played a guy who ran a total gods list. And he just ran all sorts of gods, and it was very heavily tuned really well. Apparently, it's a popular list going around, but that particular version of Blue White completely destroyed it. The next week, I switched to even Floxless from the Pro Tour, and then when I faced that same guy again, I was actually sweating bullets because all those gods were. I was actually terrified that he was going to hit critical mass to where I couldn't get rid of the gods, but the gods were going to be able to activate each other and keep each other active.
That would be a problem.
Yeah. So that's
that would be a huge problem. They would just turn sideways and get there.
Yeah, so it's...
Like you're going on the deck list, it's not even just the pros they follow. Like, the innovations we've seen out here, even in the modern metagame, a few FNMs ago, I didn't actually get to play this guy, but a Japanese guy, he was playing a Living End list, and he would sit there and cycle. He would sit there and cycle, and then turn three, where he'd go to Living End, he would cast a Deceiver Exarch, and... You know, people were just blown out by that because then the next thing they're like getting Splinter Twin comboed out, and that was amazing. He was crushing people with that.
I think that's where Living End needs to go. Like where they should turn to. I mean, they are not a tier one deck. We all know that, but Living End needs something else. It needs a punch, and I think the Pestermite Splinter Twin combo will be huge. I mean, Will, you saw what I ran on Friday at the local FD. I ran basically a pile of junk plus Splinter Twins and Pestermites. And sometimes you catch people with their pants down.
Yeah, you did. I mean, when I was playing you, I mean, you didn't get to combo me, but when I thought seized you and I wasn't expecting to see a Splinter Twin. And I mean, that's sometimes nerve wracking when you know that it could be coming at any moment, or when it catches you off guard. I mean,
never tap out for combo.
Well, that's what we're trying to get at is, it's one thing when you know you're playing a combo deck, you know, when they're like turn one Serum Visions, you know, you're like, okay, there's combo in the air.
When you're
playing a deck, you know, with Living End, which Living End is kind of a combo deck, but that's not the combo you're expecting, you know.
Right.
You could be sitting there clenching, you know, answers to all these guys on your next turn, you know. You could be like, you know, you could be holding like a Cryptic Command, you're like, oh, I'll just, you know, tap or bounce their guys next turn. But then they're like Pestermite next turn Splinter Twin and you tapped out because you're like, oh, I can just deal with this next turn, then you know that catches you off guard. And I think he's right, having access to that combo in Living End, which I love playing Living End. It's a great deck. I have a lot of fun playing it. I like beating people down with, you know, eighth draft pick commons. You know, Jungle Weaver gets there.
Sweet.
So why don't we just go ahead and talk a little bit about what the modern meta has been like locally over here? I haven't been able to make it down to FNM in a couple of weeks for modern, but do you guys feel that it mirrors? Are people mostly net decking over here in Japan, or maybe their net decks are just very different because they go to different websites? Or what do you guys think?
No, it's very. I mean, I think the Americans definitely net deck quite a bit, but I mean, it's very healthy. I mean, this Friday it was a lot of Twin, but a lot of people are a lot of people are trying to practice for the GP. So Twin is, you know, probably, you know, it's in the top three decks of what you should be playing if you want to be playing top decks.
See, that's where we disagree, but yeah, where you should be at right now in a GP, I think Affinity is where you want to be. A lot of people.
There's a lot of hot new tech for it now.
But a lot of hot new tech. And Soul Artifact.
Jesus.
It gives them that extra punch. Thoughtcast, cut that card. Who even needs it now that Military Intelligence is a card? You know, this might be me just going off on a little tangent about cards that I want to see play in Modern and want to be good. But I'm almost 100% positive you will see Military Intelligence in GP Kobe.
Yeah, you know, I actually with, you know, and I'm Kiki Pot player. That's what I do. But I'm actually considering Kiki Pot. A lot of lists usually don't run removal in the main because we just go ahead and hope that our tools get us there. But and so Artifact has actually made me consider the maybe I should run a couple of Path to Exiles, you know, maybe one or two in the main, just to have them, just in case that Ensoul Artifact shows up. Because if I can, then it's almost a virtual two for one. But if not, then that card can beat down hard and fast.
I mean, you want it also because there is a lot of Twin running around. I mean, you got to have answers to these combo decks immediately. Maliripod, you know, they play two Abrupt Decay in the main, but again, Maliripod doesn't have to rely on the combo. So Abrupt Decay, you know, is just a great card to have in there. It's virtually good in every single matchup. It's really not a dead card. It's never really a dead card. I mean, maybe when you're playing Storm sometimes.
No, it's just Spellskite. Spellskite's so good.
I think the decks you got to worry about right now in the metagame is obviously Pod Variants, Affinity, Twin, and Jund. I think even Tron. I think Tron should at least be on your radar. You should at least know how to play the Tron matchups.
Yeah, actually, now, Lucas, how do you feel about this? As a Kiki Pod player, I have a hard time usually against Tron, just especially blue-white Tron with all the board wipe effects. Is that about the same for you? Especially once Elesh Norn gets out, I'm done usually.
Elesh Norn is extremely hard to deal with as a Pod player. But as a Pod player, it's one of the, you know, playing that Tron is one of those decks that you need to run through the gauntlet. You know, the gauntlet could be however many decks, whatever you think is going to be there of the meta. So, you know, our gauntlet basically consists of Affinity, Pod, Tron, both green, red, and blue, white, or mono blue, whatever you want to really play against. Scapeshift, Living End, Kiki Pod. Well, when I said Pod originally, I meant Malira Pod, but yeah. Now Kiki Pod, there's so much in Storm. Our gauntlet and our play group that you need to play against. You need to know how to play against. Exactly, yeah. Storm.
I happen to be the Kiki Pod guy in the area. Everybody's been bugging me lately. They're like, hey man, I need to practice my Kiki Pod matchup. I'm like, all right, I'll make time for you.
I need to learn the matchup. I don't know what to do again. But coming from a Malira Pod player, if you jam a Elesh Norn, my answer is I'm going to somehow find a way to drop a Shriek Maw and kill it. Like, that's the only thing I got. There's nothing else that I can do against that card other than a Phyrexian Metamorph calling Elesh Norn.
Yeah. So you use Shriek Maw, it's pretty much as a removal spell, right?
Shriek Maw is my end-all, be-all. I'm going to use it to kill whatever's in my way, really.
Terror on a stick.
Yeah, really. You pod up the chain, find a Shriek Maw, deal what's within your way, and then you continue about your day and you continue about your plan and try and get in there for the win.
It's a good card. I mean, having fear in a lot of matchups where they can't block it it's just awesome.
No tapping on the table. That's getting cut off.
Let's cut this out. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the announcements Wizard has been making? For one, they got a lot of flack from the players because they had announced that all the Pro Tours were going to go standard only. And then they kind of went back to that after they heard the outrage of all the modern players, especially on Twitter. And then now we're going to one modern Pro Tour a year. How do you feel about that? You think that's sufficient support for modern? Is modern the type of format that needs innovation, or do we prefer to kind of have a nice long archetypes that kind of last for a very long time?
I think like there was a big misconception. Yes, they did want to go to four standard Pro Tours a year, which is, I understand why people are mad. I was mad about it. The thing they didn't know is they added two more modern GPs for next year. Instead of having six, so they had eight. So they basically moved them down. I think Wizards is really trying to push standard right now because standard gets, you know, it gets more people, the newer people, that's what they know.
And it gets the money.
That's what they play, yeah. I think that there definitely needs to be at least one modern Pro Tour. I think it helps the format a lot. I think that's the format you want to grow just as much as standard. I mean, yes, it's expensive. I think they've done a great job of trying to make it cheaper for people. I think they should continue to do that. I think it shouldn't be as expensive as it is.
So what do you guys think? Fetch lands and Modern Masters 2? I mean, everybody's speculating that Modern Masters 2 will come out now that GP Vegas is tentatively announced.
We'll see.
Modern Masters 2 on the whole fetch land thing, you're asking me. Most of you listeners don't know this, but I love is a soft word for it, but I love Legacy. Go all in on Legacy all day, every day. But you know, they could reprint the old Onslaught Fetchlands, which would that be good for a lot of people financially? Yeah. Would I lose money? Yeah, I would. Would it upset me? Probably a little bit. But I don't think Modern needs to have the perfect mana base. It's got a really good mana base so far. I don't think they need to be perfect. If they reprint the Zendikar lands, that would be super sweet because everybody can start getting them and it'll get more players into Modern, which Wizards of the Coast has been trying to do, but they are upsetting me so much just because everything that they're throwing out there, for example, they tried to not have Modern as a Pro Tour format, which almost killed Modern. Like, it really did. It almost killed Modern. But they obviously they backed down on that because they realized that Modern was the new extended and it really needed to be a thing. So
I don't know. Calling don't it know. The new extended, that's kind of a curse word, isn't it?
It is. It is. But I think reprinting the Zendikar lands would be a good thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, the advice I give to most people when it comes to those specific lands is, if you're actively playing, hold your playsets. If you're hoarding them, just go ahead and move them. Because 9 out of 10, they probably are due for a reprint. Wizards has been very clear that they are willing to reprint cards. I mean, the putting Thoughtseize as a rare in a massively produced set like Theros, that really tanked the price of Thoughtseize. So when it comes to Modern cards, there really seems to be no sacred cows for the sake of keeping their value. So
yeah, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, coming from me who didn't have Thoughtseize, couldn't play a lot of decks because of Thoughtseize, and, you know, having it available to you, I don't think a one mana, you know, discard spell should be $70.
And that is true, and that's what I'm really saying for a lot of folks is if you're hoarding your fetch lands so that you can make more money later, you might as well just sell them now. It seems that they're probably due for a reprint. Wizards recognized with the Shocklands how important those were for the format, and look what they did. They dropped 66% in price because of the fact that they just decided to say, well, forget it. We're gonna go ahead and stick them in. We're gonna stick them in two different sets.
Well, it's clear that Wizards of the Coast does not want people to have to pay a lot of money to get into Modern. For the starters, you look at the Shocklands, right? They were, what, $20 to $30 from the original. And once they got reprinted, the price kind of stayed the same, just a little bit, went down, and then it ended up tanking. And now those are, like, $10 or less for all of the Shocklands. And, you know, look at Goyf. Look at Bob. Look at, well, Dark Confidant. I'm sorry. It's Force of Habit.
Yeah, I like it. It's Bob. Look at, it's not Skrillex. Bob.
It's not Skrillex. It's Bob. But look, like you guys were talking about, Thoughtseize, right? That was way too expensive. Like, I know it saw play in both Legacy and Modern, but it doesn't need to be that price. Wizards was just too upset about those prices, and they're willing to reprint anything in Modern. So I don't think you should be the type of person that hoards on to any type of Modern card. Get your playsets, like you said, and move the rest.
I mean, Thoughtseize is still a $16 card. I mean, it's not necessarily cheap, you know. You're not, I mean, and the same with the Shocklands. The Shocklands are going to rotate. They'll probably drop a little bit, and then they're going to go back up. And if they decide, and I think Wizards, if they're going to reprint the fetches, they should do it in a standard set, because I think it will help standard along, especially in a, you know, a wedge block, especially a heavy three-color block. And I think what will happen is the Shocklands will, whether they reprint the Onslaught or the Zendikar ones, I think the Shocklands will eventually go back up, and those will be the expensive staples you'll have to get for Modern.
And so that leads to the next question. So if not in Modern Masters, when in the block are the Fetchlands going to come back? Does it make sense for them to come back during Constantar Kerr, or would they come back during another set?
I think they will come back in another core set. That's me. I'm super speculative on everything. But this is also going to go... this is also going to be me talking about set with Wizards. They just continue to give standard players great or exceptional standard mana bases, and I don't think that's where standard should be at. I think people should be grinded out monocolor decks. Like, yeah, that is what's happening right now, but only because Devotion is a thing. If Devotion wasn't a thing, people wouldn't be playing the monocolor decks. They'd be playing three colored five color pile of I win.
And I mean, that's actually, I mean, that's a really good point, though, I noticed, because it seems to me that the during Scar's block, for example, and when Innistrad first came out, what was the main deck during that time? It was Cobblade, and Cobblade was blue-white. And it seemed like a lot of decks during that time were two-color decks. And then Ravnica came out, and then everybody got spoiled. Everybody got spoiled because they could all of a sudden reliably play three-color decks, especially if you were in Jund. If you were in Jund, you can just grab any card you any that you always had perfect mana. It was very easy because the cards were just there. And so when we went to the other formats and people were starting to have a hard time fixing their mana, and we're with everybody complaining right now about monocolor decks, it's kind of funny because it seems like Wizards is trying to push the reset button on the three color decks, but they probably went a little too far, and now they have monocolor decks, and then they have Esper.
And I mean they're about to go into a three color, you know, set. So I mean, I think that if you're gonna make a three set based on multicolor again, then you're gonna have to have some kind of decent mana fixing. And I really like them reprinting the Painlands. I think that was like very nice. I think if they do reprint fetch lands, I think those are a good combination because you can't fetch up, you can't play Modern in Standard basically. You can't fetch up, you know, your Stomping Ground with whatever fetch land you currently have. Like, you'll have to fetch up basics, and you'll have additional fixing with Painlands, which the Painlands aren't free. I mean, you can take a good amount of damage over a course of five turns just tapping for mana. I think the weirdest thing they reprinted was Urborg. I think that was just a really weird card to reprint. I think it was... I like it. I mean, tapping a Mutavault for, you know, black mana when you're playing Mono Blue to cast your Night Vale Spectre has been pretty sweet.
Definitely has made Mono Black X that much more powerful, I think. Yeah, it seemed like during the Pro Tour, Urborg was what made that blue-white deck. I mean, that
black-white
deck. Yeah, the black-white deck. It in many situations, I think it got a lot of people out of some pretty tight corners.
Yeah, you gotta think about it, though. I mean, the couple standard deck... I played two standard games against mono-black and black-white where they played their Urborg, and I was playing Mono Blue, and I was able to cast my, you know, my Night Vale Spectre because, you know, I mean, you got to be cautious about that sometimes. I mean, it doesn't happen often. I think it's going to do you more good than bad, but it does come with a cost at some point. I mean, you turn your opponent's pain lands into black sources. You turn their mana confluence into a colorless source, basically.
So let's talk about Constark here. What's up with the names? Have you guys seen that? That's pretty crazy. They're pretty lame, actually.
I'm actually super excited about that. From me, I look at it as junk.
Yeah.
Black, green, like, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, hey, that's junk. Wizards of the Coast should have just went out there and called that color junk. They've just been like, yep, this is the junk plane, or this is the junk clan. You know, but they didn't. They gave them some weird names that everyone's like, what is going on with these things? I like when they printed the original, well, not the original, but when they printed the shards blocks, they gave them like, you know, easy names like Naya, Jund, Esper. I don't care how dumb you are, you won't mess that up. These kinds of Takir planes or wedges are just named completely random, and it doesn't make sense. It upsets me personally.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like when somebody is trying to write really, really crappy science fiction. So you have like a 14-year-old, and he's thinking, "Oh, I'm gonna write my own science fiction thing, and I'm gonna go ahead and this country, its name is Absan, and that country, its name is Jeskai, and then these guys are the Mardu." I mean, who came up with these names? Like 14-year-olds, they're pathetic. They're, you know, we expect better from Wizards, and it just they don't roll off the tongue. They sound ridiculous. And it's, I don't know, I really don't like it. And Sergo Helmsmasher, I mean, I'm pretty sure Blizzard is probably kind of pissed off because that just sounds like a name straight out of World of Warcraft.
I mean, it's the same thing for the way I look at it as, you know, DC Comics with Superman. Okay, Superman is basically a god. And it seems like a little 14-year-old, well, not even a 14-year-old, maybe like a 6, 7-year-old kid made up Superman. Because oh man, there's this guy that can literally do everything better than everyone else, but his weakness is a green rock.
Oh yeah, don't even get me started on DC versus Marvel. I mean, like, Green Lantern, his weakness is yellow. Whoa.
It's not even a thing. It's a color. It's a thought, really.
Yeah, that's why the only good Marvel superhero ever was Batman. Because he's the only one that's relatable, kinda, besides being super rich.
You said Marvel, but you mean DC, correct?
Well, yeah, I meant DC. I'm sorry. Yeah, but Marvel seems just all their heroes seem to be they seem to be much better. Their powers they're not as insane, and they just seem more human. They have human flaws, and then they're not insanely overpowered. Green Lantern is so powerful that his only weakness is yellow. That it just doesn't make any sense to me. Or Superman, he's the ultimate thing, except that he's allergic to a rock.
He dies to a rock, right? Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is shove that thing up his butt, and he's going to roll over. He will do anything that you ask him to do. But anyways, I think Marvel has a couple of overpowered people, but DC, like, seriously, Superman and Green Lantern, why didn't you just screw the Green Lantern and give the quote-unquote Lantern to Batman, because Batman would go in there and then just wreck everyone. Because I guarantee you Batman has a better imagination than Green Lantern, whatever his real name is. I don't even care about him. So, like, Batman with Green Lantern would be overpowered. We all know that. But that's besides the point. Wizards of the Coast is pissing me off. So, that happens.
DC, take note. Traveling LeMage is helping you out here. Yeah, but just going back to the names, though, they just don't seem to make sense. Now, I believe there were actually these wedges have been named in the past. They actually had some names. What is it? Dega?
They were terrible.
Yeah. Do you know what those names are, Will?
There was Dega. I don't remember the other ones. They were all the – there was the – was it Apocalypse? They had the Volver cycle or Volver cycle where – they just had, you know, like Dagavolver. I forget the other ones. But, I mean, those names never stuck. And, I mean, that's why when Alara came and they did the first set of wedges, they came up with, you know, John, Grixis, Esper, and all that. And those were great. I wasn't around. I don't know if people were outraged. I mean, I think we're so hung up on, you know, like Bug and Rug and all these, you know, things that make three-letter, you know, these archetypes that actually make a three-letter word, which is pretty sweet sometimes. I mean, will they stick? I mean, time will tell.
Now, realistically speaking, they're not the fluff people, all the story people. They're not going to call this new tribe Bug. They're just not going to do that. But to actually to call it Sultai, that the Sultai brood, that just still doesn't make sense to me.
Shardless Sultai, are you ready for that?
Yeah, Shardless Sultai. Well, at least Star City will actually they'll have a naming convention they can stick to, besides just giving everything weird names.
I mean, if I was Wizards, I would have started calling that stuff like Intet, Treva, you know, those original dragons that were the wedges. Those should be the names. Whenever I think of those kind of stuff, you know, you just Treva. Well, so he was what? Blue, green, and white?
And the names, you know, like Those like are
Numot or all that stuff.
Those are actually, what is it, dragons, right? So it makes sense within the fluff of Constance Arc here, since they could be getting the original dragons back.
I mean, they were the dragons from, what was it, Plane Shifted, Planar Chaos, something like that, and an older set.
It was Invasion, the Invasion block.
The Invasion block, yep. Look at Will just being crushing all of the Magic the Gathering cards.
Yeah, I mean,
every single one of them.
Will's the show historian. He's assigned the historian position from now on. Yeah, make sure you add that to your Twitter Twitter handle.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at Magic Beef.
And make
that's so awesome, man. When you told me that, did you hear that, Lucas?
Yeah, at Magic Beeve.
I'm sorry.
Just everybody out there, just go ahead and hashtag Magic Beef. He will 100% appreciate it. Just nothing else. Just Magic Beef.
Yeah, I just think it's hilarious that your name could potentially double as a porn star's name.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
So Morph is coming back. How do you guys feel about that? Anybody well, actually play with Morph?
I played with a little bit.
I did back when it was originally printed, and it's going to be a nightmare. It really is.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't care what Wizards of the Coast is thinking or doing. It's going to be a nightmare for all of us.
Yeah. It's one of those abilities where it really it's not a new player ability. It's going to punish people for not knowing the cards in the set. And it's gonna, and on the opposite of that, all the experienced players, it's gonna be really good for them because if you know the cards in the set and if you're an experienced Magic player, you're gonna know what to play around. But these new cats, it's gonna be very, you know, they're gonna go to their first FNM, and they're just gonna get crushed by something just morphing into them, you know.
And that's true. And Limited, it's going to be a nightmare because it could be anything.
I think Limited will be a lot of fun. Honestly, I think Standards where it's gonna be. That's the format where you start out, you know, that's where you get your training wheels and start playing Magic. I mean, Limited is far more complicated, you know, and also it's not a core set. So, I mean, that's another thing is you should start your Limited playing, you know, the core sets, which give you these nice general cards to help you out. But Limited still takes, I think, a little bit more skill than, you know, Standard just because you have to have a grasp of the cards in the set.
Yeah, I'm thinking from if you draft 2 to 3 Morph cards, it could be anything. And then on top of that, because you don't know what your opponent drafted, it could be anything. Whereas in Standard, I think once Morph becomes part of the actual meta game, people will kind of tend to know what Morph cards are in which decks. And so unless you're running more than 3 Morph, if you're running anything less than 3 Morph cards, then it won't be a problem. But once you start earning 3 or more, it can get pretty insane because it could be anything. And Standard and Limited, just because you never know what they drafted, just not knowing, I think, is going to make for a lot of feel-bad moments.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of blowouts, but I mean, that's the Morph is just another kind of combat trick, and that's what makes the Limited format appealing, is you get to play with these cards that you wouldn't get to play with anywhere else. And I think Morph, from what I've heard for the Onslaught block Limited, it was a lot of fun to play because of the Morph mechanic. Standard's going to be a nightmare at first because of, you know, it's going to be a very complicated ability for Standard and the newer players. I think everyone's going to be pleasantly surprised for the Limited aspect. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think the other thing it's going to kind of be really hard on is the pre-release or the newer player. That's the Limited format where new players will most likely turn to. But it's going to be – the pre-release is going to be a – it's going to be even for the more adjusted players, it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, how crazy is that? Constantarkir pre-release is actually going to be probably – the first pre-release in over 3 years I've actually played back in the States. So I'm going to play everything in English. And then for the next one, whatever that thing is called, that's going to be the first one I play in South Korea. So I'm going to have a weird moment of time where Constantarkir is going to be in English, but the next set is going to be in Korean, coming from Japanese pre-releases.
Talking about cons of Takir, I am hoping that I can make it. Well, I mean, I'm not hoping. I'm going to make it a GP Orlando. So I will let you all know my quote-unquote preparation for that, because there will be none.
What's the format for GP Orlando?
Limited.
It is sealed and draft.
Oh, are you serious? Oh, I wish I could go.
So I'm basically going to show up there blind, deuce and sealed. I don't want to draft because if I don't know anything about the format or if I have not had any practice drafting, that is, you know, you'll just do bad. So it'll be my, it's my in-transit time from Japan back to the United States of America. And I think I'm a good sealed player, not a draft player, but sealed just because I think that I'm better
at opening Magic than most people.
And I can just open a random six-pack and make some random stuff. I mean, Will, you've seen me do it before. You've seen me open a six packs and just get there with whatever I opened on multiple occasions, really.
Yeah, no, I wish you the best of luck at that one. I think the going to a GP, especially one that's going to be hosted by Star City, has got to be amazing. Star City does a great job of all their events. I'm looking forward to watching that one. I'm looking forward to watching GP Jersey, which they're also hosting, and I like them hosting a Legacy GP. That's just going to be awesome.
Those brainstorm playmats and sleeves, though. Like, come on, man! Yeah. I'm going to attempt to move a mountain just to get there. That will be such a blast.
So you're playing Delver?
I really want to play Delver only because I have 8 Delvers, and I have them all. Well, I have more than 8 Delvers, but I have 8 Delvers that are altered by one of my close friends, Josh Gibson. And you can find him on Facebook, all that stuff. He likes to do, commissions?
Yeah.
But he altered my Delvers, right? 8 of them, right? Different arts of Eevee on the original side. And if you flip it over, it is all of Eevee's evolutions on the 8 of them. So it's pretty sweet. I just really want to just flip some Espeons and Umbreons and Flareons, Jolteons on some people and just be like, what?
Now, what you need you need to find a list that matches. So if you play red, you can throw in that electric Pokemon and that fire one.
Flareon and Jolteon?
Yeah, whatever. You know what I mean. But yeah, just find that and then go off of that. So go. You got to run like Rug Delver or something. And then you can do the water, the fire. What is it? Water, fire, electricity, and I guess what would be green?
Leafeon? I mean, keep up with your Pokemon lore, bro.
Oh, are you serious? Like, I only know about, like, the 3 original ones.
No, yeah. So, the all the Eevees are Flareon, the original fire, Vaporeon, the original water, Jolteon, the original electrical, a.k.a. the original fastest Pokemon in the game. Then they came out with Gold and Silver and the second generation, which was Espeon and Umbreon. Espeon was psychic, Umbreon was dark. Then they did a couple things, didn't really touch the Eevees, came out with Leafeon and Glaceon. Leafeon was obviously the leaf type, and Glaceon was an ice type. And then my favorite was Sylveon, the fairy type Pokemon. My god. Fairies are super sweet.
See, that's what you gotta do, man. You gotta save your fairy one if you ever run some sort of blue, like a blue red Delver fairy deck or a black blue Delver fairy deck. And then, but you gotta take. You definitely gotta run Rug Delver now.
Well, that's the thing. When I play a different Eevee for the situation, right? So if I have 2 Delvers in hand, like opening hand, I basically drop the twins. Right, Espeon and Umbreon, because they're the twins from the same set, blah zee blah, and they flip at the same time, all that stuff. Now, if I have like 1 Delver in my opening hand and I'm trying to make him flip as fast as possible, I'm gonna play a Jolteon, because Jolteon's the fastest Pokemon in the game. That's just this is all just me being like total superstitious about playing Magic. And if I'm grinding out and I draw a Delver on like turn 9, turn 10, just grinding. See, this is also me playing Rug Delver in Modern. It's a thing. If you want a deck list, just comment below. But if I'm grinding it out, and you know, turn 9, turn 10 comes around, and I pull a Delver, I'm gonna drop my Sylveon because that's my favorite. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Lucas, have you been keeping up with most of the metagame, right? So on Legacy.
Oh, man, you are talking to the Legacy aficionado over here. I will do anything to play some Legacy.
I'm the assistant aficionado.
Legacy all day.
I'm also the assistant aficionado. I every time there's an open, I go out of my way to watch it at work on my phone. People will just be like, I'll be sitting outside, like, people are smoking, like, looking at me all weird. But Legacy is a great format, man. It's super fun. I'm glad it exists. I wish it saw more. That's the other reason I love Star City is they're keeping it alive. I mean,
they're sure making Star a lot City, of money off of them.
They're making a lot of money off it. But Star City Games is keeping it alive in America. a lot of people don't know this, but in Japan, Legacy is actually huge. The new schedule of GP have gone out, and there's one Legacy GP in the States for, well, United States of America, for 2015, and there is a Legacy GP in Japan for 2015.
Yeah, I was actually shocked.
If you know the meta and if you can keep it up to date with it, they didn't do it this year. 2014, they didn't have a Legacy GP. But 2013, they have a Legacy GP in Japan. And, you know, the couple stores that we play at out here, Zeros and Cardbox, Zeros actually had a Grand Prix Trials for Legacy, which I thought was amazing. I didn't win it. I didn't get to go to it, but I had a blast playing it. I mean,
that's what I was gonna say. I was impressed when I actually only got to go to a couple of those Legacy events, and it seemed to have more than 20 players. And for a community like ours to have more than 20 Legacy players to be able to meet on a Sunday, that just seemed mind-boggling to me.
Well, I mean, Legacy is such a huge and wide format that almost anyone can get into, and it's just super fun. I will push Legacy all day on everybody. In Japan out here, people have actually given me the name of Legacy Lucas, and I wear that with pride.
So how do the locals say that?
If you want to go to Legacy, I will let you borrow whatever you need. I'll give you the deck.
So continuing on about Eternal formats, let's go back and talk about Kobe since you guys are heading back up there. What type of decks are you guys taking?
Oh, man. I tried talking about it earlier. I'm currently bringing Pod. I was originally on a Rug Delver list because it's super sweet. I love Delver. I mean, you guys heard me talk about my Alter Delvers, which are super sweet. You know, there's a couple of us going. We're going to be bringing Affinity. We're going to be bringing, I'm bringing Pod. And one of the rogue decks we're going to be bringing is Elves. Elves is super sweet and, in my opinion, underplayed in the format. there's a potential that it could get blown out with, like, Electrolyzes or certainly timed Lightning Bolts or Orzhov
Conflicts.
What about
Verdict? When Verdict mess up that deck?
Yep, you can just Supreme Verdict, Day of Judgment. It'll hurt it pretty hard. Or
Anger of the Gods.
Oh, crap.
See, I mean, we're going to talk about this, but so you think. I mean, they can always drop, what's that guy's name? Will, I mean, you're our historian. And he's like 6 or 7 mana. You draw cards equal to the amount of, converted mana green or whatever. He used to see play in Legacy of. Well, I think he still does. I can picture him. What is his name?
I'm looking it up actually right now.
Yeah, okay. We'll edit this out and it'll make Will look like a boss. And we'll just be like, boom. This guy.
Or not. Just the awkward pauses.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
We'll just awkward pause for like 30 minutes. No big deal, but.
Yeah.
It's okay. If you're listening to this, you can just hear to my sultry singing as Will finds the proper magic card. Okay, this is kind of bad. I'm gonna cut some of this out.
Yeah, I'd recommend cutting like all of it out. I gotta look at the Facebook page and like look at the deck list from Last Modern.
Yeah, I looked at a random Legacy Elves deck. BT Dubs, Warren the Instigator got ran in an Elves deck and took first online. Like that boggles my mind.
Now the online
Regal Force. I found it as Regal Force.
Regal Force, that's his name. Start off with Will being like Regal Force.
Sure, we'll see. Anyway, you were saying, Lucas?
Yeah, most of this is getting cut out. Probably just this whole, from me being like, Will, what was that card? Until Will says Regal Force should probably get cut out. But that's me.
Anyway, back to Legacy Modern Elves.
Are we like going back to me talking about Modern Elves, or are we going to go straight to Will saying Regal Force?
Regal Force in relation to Modern Elves?
Okay, I think... All right, Will, just say Regal Force, and then I'll go on.
Oh, crap. All right, Regal Force is the card you were talking about.
Force, thank you. It doesn't matter if you get blown out by Day of Judgment or what. I mean, it does a little bit, but Regal Force will, for the most part, get you back because you draw a lot of cards, And then, you know, you can pull out an Elvis champion and be like YOLO and just get there with 2-2 or 3-3 elves.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a super list.
I played against it multiple times, multiple decks. You'd be surprised how fast is. I mean, most of his creatures are, you know, one base toughness, which sometimes you get, you know, playing against Pod, you can kind of get blown out by Pontiff. Other times, though, I mean, these things get up to 4/4, 5/5 pretty quick, and they get out of range of anger. They can easily get out of range of anger, you know, on turn 2, turn 3 when they're about to drop it. You do have to worry about, in a deck like that, you do have to worry about sweepers. I mean, but there are cards you can, you know, bring in. He's still trying to fine-tune his list. I think it's a pretty sweet deck, though. I mean, very roguish. I wish him the best of luck. It's gonna be a fun. He's just gonna have fun with it. He loves elves. Like I tell most of my friends, if they're stuck on a deck, I tell them you need to play something you're comfortable with, what you like. You shouldn't have to make Magic a job. You should play something that you're gonna have fun with, and that's why Magic is a fun game. I mean, you can play your elf deck.
I mean, he loves elves in Legacy. We know that, obviously, because he plays it all the time. And
can he go off in turn one? I mean, turn four. Can he do the turn four kill?
Oh yeah, he can. He can sometimes turn three. You. It's very hard, but
he will get a Crater Hoof when you least expect it.
Three and four are normally his kill turns with comboing out. Because he can generate. You know, he can search up. He can search up his Crater Hoof with summoners pact, and he could drop it. I mean, he can easily make. He can easily make like infinite mana. Turn three or four.
Which is pretty scary to think about in Modern.
Or he can just, you know, he could drop the Regal Force, draw, like, half his deck, be like, all right, here's a bunch of power, you know, here's a bunch of 5/5, 6/6s, go. I mean, and unless you're playing, you know, Supreme Verdict doesn't see much play, you know, except in, like, some blue-white control lists and, you know, the Giftstron. It's very hard to deal with a board state like that.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking about my own list, and I don't think I have any board wipers. That I could use like that.
I mean, a lot of people think it's a joke, but Forest Walk is actually a thing.
Yeah, right now?
It is against me.
It'll run, yeah, against you. It'll run right through Gertron. It'll run right through Pod. I'm sorry, not Gertron. Black X, whatever you want to run. Junk, Jund. It'll run right through all of those.
Rug Twin? I mean...
Yeah, it'll run through Rug Twin, which...
Regular Twin, too.
Hey, what happened? Yeah, exactly. They can get dudes out faster than Rug Twin can combo out, which is kind of bad for that matchup on Rug Twin's end. But, you know, it's one of those rogue decks that one of us are bringing, and I hope it does well. I think it'll do good in the grinders on Friday. So
I'm just hoping out for the best. Yeah. Having access
and,
to choke.
And choke. God, choke is huge in Modern right now. It's one of those rogue sideboard cards because most people that run green are running blue, like Effect or Kiki Pod. And
so, what does Choke do again?
Choke. All right. So it's an enchantment that. How much does it cost, Will? You're the historian.
Green. It is one green mana, two colorless. Islands don't untap during their controller's untap steps.
During their controller's untap steps, that is pretty terrible because they can counter basically one card or jam. One Delver, I mean, that's talking from me because I love Delvers, but once that's tapped, it's not untapping, and it's pretty hard to recover from that.
Especially with all the tempo-based decks, it really throws the, you know, it really throws the Twin and the other tempo decks for a loop because they rely on so much of remanding a spell, untapping their lands, you know, casting an Exarch, you know, they rely on those tricks, and with, you know, icing down their mana like that, It really makes them stumble, and that's where you just, you know, flood the board with big green dudes and swing. I mean, Brian Kibler would just be proud of our friend Josh.
Now, what set is that? What set is that? I'm actually thinking about this card because I'm thinking it might actually work against Scape Shift.
It was a time shifted. It was a time shifted reprint, I believe.
And originally out of what? Torment?
No, it was older than that. It was in a bunch of core sets too.
Whatever the Cloud and the Lightning Bolt is.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Tempest. It was Tempest 8th edition, and then also Tempest and 8th edition are actually the only two sets it was printed in. I was wrong. It was not time shifted.
Yeah, Tempest is actually the Cloud and Lightning Bolt. That's how I like to describe it. Also the original set for my beloved card, Wasteland. Gotta love Legacy. #.
Yeah, we need to make that an actual hashtag.
#Legacy.
Hashtag legacy. Yeah, so yeah, apparently I just looked it up. It's $1.34 on TCG Player, so I'm going to go ahead and pick some up just because it might make it into my sideboard at some point. Just I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't think it's a good Kiki Pod, but...
No, I'm just thinking overall, I'm considering it's against Scapeshift. It just, if you can stop all the countering that goes on by tapping down their blue mana, that might actually do it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, you have access to Avent Mind Sensor, which I think is just a better card in Kiki Pod or Malira Pod. Is that card just, you know, it gets them. I mean, Choke could be all right, but Scapeshift is a slow deck anyway. It's not trying to kill you fast. I think with Pod and the way the Pod works is you're a creature toolbox deck, and the cards that are not creatures in your sideboard have a very specific purpose. And don't get me wrong, I think Choke's a good card, but I just don't think Pod is the right deck for it.
Yeah, that might be true.
I think I agree with Will. Pod lists, so Kiki Pod, Malira Pod, Angel Pod, whatever. You basically look at it, and it's sideboard. All 75 cards is basically like a pile of trash that you wouldn't play in any deck, but one card brings it all together, which is Burning Pod. And, you know, out of Kiki Pod, I don't think I'd run Choke just because you're so reliant on blue mana.
Yeah, but, that's true.
It's one of those cards that if you're playing a mono-green deck, why not run them? You know, because majority of the decks you play in Modern are going to be blue.
Have you guys seen, what is it, Green Machine?
Is that the Devotion to Green Modern deck? Is that
what we're talking about?
The Genesis Wave one, yeah.
I don't think you're talking about the Genesis Wave one, but the one that turn one, a mana dork. Turn two, like the Strangleroot Geist. Turn three, whatever that three specific green mana, what is it, like 5/4 or something like that? I have seen that list. I played it online, and I got completely wrecked, and that was a bad day for me. It was a bad daily. It was basically like my winning in to the 3-1 bracket, but sometimes you just lose.
Yeah. So, do you actually have your Pod deck online?
I guess you can say yes. Not really. It's pretty hard. I have my Pod list. If anybody wants it, I can always just ask for it in the comments, and I'll post it. That's easier for me, I guess. But
yeah, because I was looking at it. I tried playing Pod online, and I mean, it's cool, but I always worry about running out of time because you just gotta run across that one jerk that makes you make 40-something Restoration Angel copies, and then that just seems to be insane. How do you get around that?
You just gotta be a better player. I mean, it helps you. I mean, it's a good way to practice. Same thing with Splinter Twin. Sometimes they'll make out the dudes, but you get better at it. I mean,
yeah, I guess that is true. So why don't we just go ahead and wrap it up here? And so what we'll do is for next week's episode, we'll make sure that we bring in more of the guys that are actually going to GP Kobe. We'll try to bring on Dan. We'll try to bring on Joe. Some of the other guys that are definitely going for sure. And then you guys can talk about the latest Modern metagame and how you guys expect for it to be different for Japan. And then you guys can tell us about any plans you guys have going up to Kobe. Because after all, Kobe is a pretty major city in Japan. And there's probably a lot of stuff that you guys probably want to do.
Yeah, Kobe is going to be super fun. We're going to go out there. There's a lot of Japanese players from Okinawa, well, the little island that we're at, that are headed towards GP Kobe. And it's going to be super fun to go out there. And we're kind of setting things up where we're going to go out. We're going to have some nightlife with some of the Japanese locals, which will be fun. And we're going to grind together. And we're just going to, you know, whoever does the best, we're going to congratulate them the most. And trying to hope everybody makes day two, because that's really what you hope for when a group you guys go. I mean, it doesn't matter how good you are. I mean, look at GP Boston, right? Boston Worcester. Patrick Dickman. Everyone knows him. Like, basically innovated Twin and Rug Twin. Didn't even make day two. You know, it's just one of those things where if you're unlucky, you're unlucky. So we're just hoping everybody makes it to day two and has some fun. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, so you guys are definitely – so who do we know that is going? So we probably know a lot of guys, Japanese guys that are going. Are you guys planning to hook up with them? Maybe have them show you around since, you know, they actually speak the language?
Most of them are judging, but a few of them are actually going to play.
Okay. Okay. That's totally cool. Yeah.
Hopefully I can go out and Moto-san. Hopefully me and Moto-san can go out and get some beers. That's what I'm hoping for.
That's cool. Yeah.
That'd be like Facebook Pro for selfie or whatever. You know what I mean? Just that doesn't happen a lot. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely one of the plans I do have for the show is I would like to have either Arime-san or Naoto-san have either one of them come be a guest for the show. We're not sure how we're going to work that out yet, but their English is...
Chris, man. We should have Chris when Chris is on because he's, you know, he can speak Japanese. Could probably help us.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Make sure he does the translating. Well, I think this about wraps it up for the show. We're probably dragging along on right now. So if you held on this far, thank you for listening. We definitely do plan to make this a weekly show, so please stay tuned, and hopefully we can come back to you week after week, bringing you information from around the world about the Magic community and the many players that are not necessarily pro players, but are out there traveling, having fun, enjoying big events, and trying to get into that meta.
Keeping the dream alive.
All right, guys. So before we go, do you have any sort of contact information or anywhere where you can be reached at?
My name is William Beversluis or Will Beave. My Twitter handle is @MagicBeave. I just made it. I'm just learning how to do the whole tweeting thing. So
can you spell that for us, Will?
It's MagicBeave.
Awesome. So make sure you tweet @TheMagicBeave. So there you go. For my Twitter handle is Jose, that is spelled Jose _Luis _Liy. So Jose Luis Lee. So if you want to send me a message, hit me up. Go ahead and do it. I'm at that point where any interaction would be kind of cool anyway. Now we have our resident card outer over with us. Do you have any contact information just in case people want to check your stuff out, see if they like it, maybe put in some commissions for you?
Yeah, you can reach myself and my partner Daniel at G&G Alters on Facebook. That's capital G and the ampersand G space Alters.
Yeah, so Dan will be a guest hosting or actually maybe be a regular part of the show pretty soon too. So just stay tuned. You'll get to hear him out. Definitely check their Facebook page. They make some pretty amazing alters, and I run a lot of them in my decks. And they'll work with you. You have a crazy idea, they'll work with you. Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening, and we hope you can join us next week where we talk about our preparations for GP Kobe.